Hey, listeners. After five babies, I've changed a lot of diapers, and I have opinions about them. A lot of people think Pampers Cruisers 360 are best to use when your baby is older. But in my experience, they're the best diapers to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. That's because these diapers don't have ordinary diaper tabs. They have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that makes it so easy to change your wiggly baby who just can't stop moving. Just slide on to apply, rip the sides to remove, and roll everything up with the disposal tape on the back. Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, and just got even better with a new blowout barrier. And since these diapers stretch with your baby, your active baby can move all over the place, getting into everything as usual. Pampers Cruisers 360 are available in sizes 3 to 7, and now feature fun new prints. For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Laura Vanderkamp. I'm a mother of five, an author, journalist, and speaker.
And this is Sarah Hart Unger. I'm a mother of three, a practicing physician, and blogger on the side. We are two working parents who love our careers and our families.
Welcome to Best of Both Worlds. Here we talk about how real women manage work, family, and time for fun. From figuring out childcare to mapping out long-term career goals, we want you to get the most out of life. Welcome to Best of Both Worlds. This is Laura. This episode is first airing in early to mid-January of 2024. We welcome any new listeners who are joining us, who've just found us. Maybe you're looking for new content in the new year, looking for ways to combine work and life and generally enjoy life as you are doing it. So welcome. We run mailbag episodes from time to time, and you can reach us in a bunch of different ways. You can always email me. My email address is laura@lauravanderkam.com. You can post a comment on my blog, which is lauravanderkam.com. There's also a contact form on my website. You fill that out. I promise that actually does come to my inbox and I look at it. As long as you're not sending me links for ads to some ridiculous thing, I do in fact read all of those. So that is an easy way to reach me, and we can use questions in future mailbags. And Sarah, people can reach out to you as well.
Of course. You can always find my near daily writing at theshoebox.com, theshubox.com. And you can leave a question there in the comments. Or you can email me. It's just my name, sarah.hart.unger@gmail.com. You can even text me, but I never have that number handy. So you can look at any Best Laid Plans show notes for that number, and you can text me anytime.
So lots of ways to reach us. Let us know your questions. Anything related to careers, family, parenting, organization, health, life, you know, whatever. We cover all sorts of topics, so we are looking forward to hearing from you. So we will go ahead and dive right into this mailbag, which we got a lot of questions, so thank you. So the first one, Sarah, let's tackle this. This person writes, my family is busy. not the rest of us, I guess. No, we're all busy. But this person starts with that. So anyway, they're doing a lot of different things. This person works full time, is starting graduate school. Her husband also has a busy full time job, is also in graduate school. So a lot of things going on. They have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old who each have activities. She writes, "Simplification, systems, and generally making things easier is a big 2024 focus in order to get it all done without unnecessary stress. So what are some of the ways that you all have simplified, streamlined, or done things differently to get through especially busy seasons of life? Or if there's anything we've tried that hasn't worked, she'd like to hear that too."
Yeah, so I think you're at a perfect time with your kids' ages, 6 and 8, to have them really kind of do some more of their own stuff. Because I often find it's right at that age that you were used to kind of like doing everything, like carefully setting up their breakfast or something like that, you know, putting away every article of clothing. But 6 and 8-year-olds can do a lot. So that might actually be part of what could perhaps streamline things. You would have to accept less perfectionistic standards if you're going to be having your kids help out. But on the flip side, you're teaching them responsibility and life skills. So that's always good. I would say, even though you're very, very busy and you have full-time careers, there's still usually some vacation time or paid leave time to use. So I would be super, super strategic about even using that in micro doses to give yourself a break every once in a while. Because I find that if I have something on the calendar, even if it's just half a day of paid leave where I'm like, I'm not doing anything, it just makes me feel better about the times when I am just kind of leading a really full life with one thing after another. So I do highly recommend trying that. And then finally, it might be good to just take an inventory of all the things that you are busy with and see if there's anything that's just like not necessary anymore, either if you've aged out of it or you feel like, you know what, I've been doing that because everyone else does it, but like, do I need to do it? And I tried to think about like an example for me, and a lot of people in my neighborhood will do like cute seasonal decor for different holidays. And I'm like, nope, never, not happening. So like, I could do that and it would be another thing on my to-do list, but I've just decided there's only so many things we can do, and I'm going to do something else instead.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime someone is in a particular busy season, I actually do recommend time tracking, just because it's helpful to see exactly how much time the big chunks of your life that you're devoting to these big projects are truly taking. Because it can feel like, well, everything's taking all my time. And certainly a full-time job, raising a family, going to graduate school, all of those are things that people might be spending the majority of their time doing. Those things might be someone's complete focus, and here you are taking on all three simultaneously. But they all take some chunk of hours out of your 168 hours in a week, and it might be helpful to see what sort of hours you are devoting to each of them and where there is time that you can devote to other things. So really map it in, see what an ideal week would look like after you time track. Say, well, what would I like the schedule of classes and homework to look like combined with the full-time job obligations I have, combined with what I need to do with my kids and what I want to do with my kids? Sort of get an idea of what a good template would look. It won't always work for you to have weeks like that, but at least it gives you an idea of what you are aiming for, which you can then build some downtime into as well. I find that people who are incredibly busy often benefit from having some sort of Sabbath, and not necessarily in a religious sense, but that there's one day when you don't do those things, right? So you're like, I'm going to work like crazy 6 days a week, but one day a week I'm not. Or maybe it's not even a full day. It's just that Wednesday night after work, going to do nothing, right? That's the night that we don't do any of those things. And then the other night, everything can be busy. We can have other obligations, but that's one time off. And I find that can be helpful to establish a little bit of a rhythm that you are not always having to do something. So you might think about that.
Purposeful recovery time.
Purposeful recovery time. Exactly. Question 2, Sarah. This person writes, how do you find time for creativity and play in your life, and what do you do? This person recently read The Gifts of Imperfection, and which advocates having time for play and things like that, and realized that this person has little of any of this. She works a corporate job with lots of email and spreadsheets. She says she's not particularly artistic or team sporty, so she's looking for outside-the-box ideas to add to her life. She plays the piano sometimes, occasionally goes to a yoga or fitness class, but that doesn't necessarily feel like creativity or play to her. So what fits those buckets in your life?
Yeah, my buckets, I mean, when I think about what my fun hobbies are, they are running and they are reading. And I guess I'll push back on the idea that like your piano and fitness classes wouldn't necessarily fill this need. Although I guess if personally it doesn't feel that fulfilling, maybe you want to figure out how you can maybe adjust those hobbies and still enjoy them, but find ways to do them maybe just a little more creatively. So for example, you wouldn't think running is like all that creative, but I mean, there's following a training plan, reading about training plans, talking to other people about running, looking at gear, having a running group with friends to talk about, maybe hosting a gathering, looking at races, trying to be creative about like what would be a fun race to go to or like destination. So, I mean, yes, I'm not like sitting there like making an artwork, but I still feel playful with how I approach that. And I also don't take it so seriously, like to make it to the point where it would like become a job or something, a chore or something like that. And then same with reading. I mean, I enjoy books. I have fun looking at people's TBR lists and making mine and doing book club and talking about books and sending texts to friends about books. And, you know, those are not, again, like super highbrow, like artistic or I don't know, like people might not initially call those creative, but I feel like there's enough there and they definitely feel like play to me and that I enjoy them. So I guess I would dive deeper into the things you're already doing and see if you can find some aspects that might make them feel more playful or fulfilling to you.
Yeah, I'm wondering if those are things that she feels like she needs to work to get better at and follow like a schedule to get better. And so those are going into the realm of things that are purposefully productive. And there's nothing wrong with that. And we enjoy all sorts of activities in that regard. But sometimes you want something in life that you're doing truly just for fun. So I wonder if you could do something that would not fit into that realm of feeling like you are doing it to get better at it or whatever. I mean, if maybe it's a sort of fitness class that you know you're going to be terrible at the beginning or whatever. I don't know, aerial class or something like that. Or with piano, maybe it's that you're going to play something not working to get better at it, but you're just sight reading random, I don't know, jazz standards or holiday carols or top 40 hits that have been transposed for piano, but just something fun like that, that you're not thinking like, oh, I'm going to get better at this and perform it. You're just doing it because it's a way to relieve stress. That might help with that mindset. I'm going to throw out two other ideas of things kind of anyone or pretty much almost anyone can do that might feel more like play or creativity. One is that blogging is a creative outlet. So Sarah certainly was doing this for a long time when she wasn't doing it professionally, just as a way to have a creative side in addition to her full-time job in medicine. You can just start whenever you want. I mean, nobody's going to be reading your blog at the beginning, so you can do whatever. And then, you know, over time, as you leave comments on other people's blogs, people will come check you out. And we've certainly seen some people grow their blogs quite quickly. I know that Sarah and I both read Elizabeth Frost's blog, Optimistic Musings. And she started about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and now has a audience where she regularly gets, you know, 30 to 40 comments on a post. So that's really grown quite quickly. Another thing you can do, I'm going to throw in a idea of community chorus. Like a lot of people are like, I can't sing. I don't think there are very many people who absolutely can't sing. What it is most people haven't practiced all that much or done it all that much, so they're not confident with it, but you can certainly become that. It's very fun to sing in a group of people. I think it taps into something like our caveman ancestors were probably sitting around the fire, passing information to each other by singing. So a lot of people find it fun in that kind of almost visceral sort of way. And a great many communities have ensembles that are open to anyone, right? Like you don't have to audition. You don't have to go through, you know, challenging music. It's going to be more accessible to everyone. So I would recommend looking into that.
Love it. I also feel like we have to mention the two trending pieces of play right now are pickleball and game nights. I feel like everywhere I turn, people are doing those things. So if either of those suits your fancy, could always go that direction as well.
One quick question before the ad break. This person writes in, have you ever considered the two of you authoring a Best of Both World book together? Best of Both Worlds book together.
I laughed. I was like, Laura, I didn't plant this, I promise. Because we've kind of like casually like mentioned it in the abstract. but never really beyond that, partly just because like I haven't really had time to write any part of a book. So it could happen. I wouldn't like rule it out.
Yeah, never rule it out. It could happen. But one of the reasons we actually started this podcast is it's a way to share information and build community that's not the written word. I mean, both of us blog very regularly and I write other things as well, but it's like that. In the modern world, there are a lot of times that people aren't sitting down to read, but they're still looking for content, and a podcast fits that very well, right? You can listen while you're in the car and listen while you're working out. And so I think we've definitely produced a lot of content that is more than the equivalent of a book in terms of words we've put out into the world at this point. But, you know, there might be a way to organize it, too. So we'll never say never.
It'll be a transcript of every single episode that we've just bound into a 30-volume set.
Yes, and like the Encyclopedia Britannica.
It'll come to your house in like a truck.
I know. Well, I print up our scripts and it's always like 4,000 words for two episodes. I'm like, whoa, okay, well, that's a lot. I guess we're doing that every 2,000 words a week. That'd be 100,000 words a year. Wow, it's a lot.
There you
go. It's a book every year. So we have the 6-volume set already.
Perfect.
All right, we're going to take a quick ad break and we'll be back with more mailbag questions.
Hey, listeners. After 5 babies, I've changed a lot of diapers. And I have opinions about them. A lot of people think Pampers Cruisers 360 are best to use when your baby is older. But in my experience, they're the best diapers to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. That's because these diapers don't have ordinary diaper tabs. They have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that makes it so easy to change your wiggly baby who just can't stop moving. Just slide on to apply, rip the sides to remove, and roll everything up with the disposal tape on the back. Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof and just got even better with a new blowout barrier. And since these diapers stretch with your baby, your active baby can move all over the place, getting into everything as usual. Pampers Cruisers 360 are available in sizes 3 to 7, and now feature fun new prints. For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Today's episode is sponsored in part by Thrive Cosmetics. I am a speed demon when it comes to my makeup routine. I have approximately 5 minutes, or maybe 3, between showering and starting my routine of getting the kids out the door for school. And so I'm always looking for products to keep things super streamlined and easy for my everyday look. Thrive Cosmetics for years has been part of that. I've discussed the Brilliant Eye Brightener before, which is a serious workhorse for making me look more awake. But lately, I'm also super into their Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara. It's a tubing mascara that lengthens lashes and is super easy to remove as well, which is key because my makeup removal routine is just as streamlined. You can feel great about shopping at Thrive because for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates products and funds to help communities thrive. So refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/bestof. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/bestof, BESTOF, for 10% off your first order.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we are back doing our first mailbag episode of the new year. So, Sarah, why don't you take this next question?
Yes. Okay, this person writes, I would like to ask a question about morning routines and entertainment. In particular, how do you fit in nonfiction reading in the morning? I feel that morning should be my most productive time and I ought to get on with my day as fast as possible or dedicate the time to some workout. However, many people claim that carving out some time for reading in the beginning of the day completely changes their mood for the better. Laura, what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is such a personality thing. I mean, I think people who enjoy reading first thing really do enjoy it. And that's something they want to make time for first thing. But if you're going to feel rushed while you're doing it and like, oh, I really need to get on to the next thing, then maybe it's not the right thing for you to be doing in the morning. I have generally done my year-long reading projects at some point during the first 30 minutes of my workday. So like in 2023, when I was reading all the works of Jane Austen, I would read my 5 to 10 pages, usually around 8:30 in the morning. So it's not the crack of dawn. I'd usually been up for about 2 hours at that point, getting kids out the door and things like that. But it was early in the workday. And partly it's because I found I couldn't truly concentrate on focused creative work anyway until everyone was out of the house. But I didn't have to be actively working on things. Like after our childcare had started and, you know, our nanny was getting people out the door, I could be in my office working. But this was something I could do knowing that stuff was still going on in the house. I guess that's what I'm saying. So reading fit that for me. And that's why I used that time. And, you know, I find it was nice to know that I'd done my reading in the morning, because then no matter what else happens in the day, at least I've read my Jane Austen, or the year before read my Shakespeare. So I like it, but I don't think it's something you have to do. And so if it doesn't appeal to you, like, let it go.
Agree. I will note that it does appeal to me. And I generally read nonfiction at around 4:45 in the morning because I go running after that and I need time to like drink coffee. Usually I have some carbs with it. And yeah, that's just kind of like how I default start my day. Usually get in about 20 minutes of reading if I really like what I'm reading, sometimes a little bit more. I don't feel like it's like some magical change, but I will say the fact that I'm reading means I'm not checking email. I'm not like, I'm actually actively avoiding inputs at that time. I'm like, I want to direct how I'm spending this early morning time. I don't even want to know about like the podcast emergency coming down the pike. And so reading is something I can do that is really engaging, but not reactive.
Excellent. So do it if it appeals to you. If it doesn't, let it go. All right, Sarah, you can read the next one too.
Ooh, here's a juicy one. I don't recall hearing from either of you whether you ever wanted to be or considered being a stay-at-home mom. The podcast and your books have helped so much, but I still have a feeling in the back of my head, will I regret not staying home while they were little?
So I've got to say that no, I never wanted to or considered being not sort of in the workforce, I guess, while the kids were little. But partly that's because I really love what I do. I mean, the way what I'm doing as I'm working is what a lot of people sort of say they'd do, like, if they didn't have to work, they'd be writing or, you know, whatever else. And so given that that's what I always wanted to be, that's not something that I would just choose not to do, right? Like, it's as much a part of my identity. Like, even if I wasn't getting paid for it, I'd be writing during the kids' nap times. I'd be writing after they went to bed at night. Like, I'd be, you know, trying to find spots to do stuff. I'd probably be sitting there in this day and age, be figuring out, can I do a podcast in the little bits of time around their schedules? So really what it is that I'm just have a bit more space available to do those things because, you know, I've had help with the care of the kids during the days. But with that, the way I work is also so flexible that I don't think I've had to trade off any part of family life that I really wanted to do. Like, if I want to take a day off and take a kid somewhere, I can, right? Full stop. And so it's not like I need to be a stay-at-home mom in order for that to happen. Like, it's just a choice that I could make, but on some days do and some days don't, right? Or if I wanted to go volunteer in a class, again, I can make that happen. You know, I work from home, so I generally see my older kids when they get off the bus. I know some people think that they need to take a break from work because they'd like to be available to tween and teen children, you know, as they are home from school. And I'm like, well, I can do that and work. So it's not that harsh trade-off that I think inspires people to think they need to go one way or another. So I think Just as a sort of out of the box idea, if you're wondering about regret, I wonder if you could do a way of trying it out for some slightly longer period of time. I mean, I'm guessing you may have taken a maternity leave, so maybe that's not really something you haven't experienced. But with your kids being not needy newborns and you recovering from childbirth, there might be a slightly different experience of it. You know, some jobs allow for an unpaid leave of absence for some amount of time, which, again, if you're thinking of being a stay-at-home mom, you're going to be living on somebody else's income or your savings or something anyway. So you might want to see how that works and how that feels. Or maybe if you were thinking of switching jobs, if this is coming up because you're not happy with what you're doing and thinking, well, maybe I should try staying home for a while instead of immediately getting another job. Well, you don't have to immediately get another job. You could say, well, I'm going to take 6 months to be more of a full-time parent, I guess how I would put that. But I'm looking for something in 6 months. Like, that's the start date when I will be targeting getting back in. And again, if you have skills that are useful and in demand, like, it's not going to be that hard to find a job in 6 months. It's not like you took years and years and years out and your skills are rusty or anything like that. So you could experiment with this. And if you love it and think it's awesome, then that's great. You know, we fully support you in that. But you may discover that, yeah, you know, I enjoy spending time with the kids and I enjoy working. And the upside of being a working parent is that you get to do both.
There you go. This is sort of a twofold question. As you were speaking, I was listening and also rereading it again, because she's asking, what do we think? And you gave your answer. And then also kind of what should she do? So I'll answer the first one first. It just never crossed my mind that I wouldn't work, which is interesting because my mother herself didn't work for a lot of my young childhood years. But I mean, I wanted to go to med school and then I went to med school and like it was hard and a lot of work.
I mean, that's a lot of training to then not be using, right? I mean, I know people do, but I mean, still, it's a lot of training to.
Yeah, there was just never a moment where I was like, well, my husband could be the breadwinner. It's fine. Like, I'll just like hang up my stethoscope and be done. I have a friend that did that at age 42 and she loves it, but it is not something I ever seriously considered, to the point when she did it, I was like, my mind was so blown by that concept. I personally don't think I would have enjoyed, like, I didn't wish for like being home with my young kids. And I know like that may sound bad, but like the idea of being home with them all day, day after day when they were little, like, and maybe not putting them in school because money would have been tighter. That would have been not like my favorite period of life. And I felt good about the experiences that they had during that time. So I felt like we both won by me going to work, doing good things at work, and them having school and another caregiver, and then me being there the rest of the time. I will say, now that I have more flexibility, I really do like it. So I mean, if I could have had what I have now from day one, that would have been amazing. But, you know, sometimes you can't have everything immediately. So I think things just worked out the way they had to work out. Now, with respect to you, I like Laura's experiment idea. I also think it's totally fine to stay home if that's what you want. I just want you to ask yourself, like, is it for you? And just to make sure it's not because you're trying to protect your kids from some kind of harm that may come to them in childcare or out of shame or familial opinions. But if it's truly what you want and not those other things, and you feel like you'd be super sad to miss it and the family can handle it financially speaking, I mean, I fully support you in doing that. And sometimes I think people who listen to this podcast might not think that we would support that, but I mean, of course we do. Women should do what they want to do. And if that includes staying home, if that's feasible, then like, great.
Yep. Choose what you want. Absolutely.
And I want to say one more thing, which is that
okay,
when we started this podcast, there were like 9 million podcasts by stay-at-home moms talking about stay-at-home mom life. And so that has not been our focus because we felt like we needed to talk about the alternative. And so that's why we're usually empowering women who choose to do both like we have, and not because we think it's bad to make the other choice.
Absolutely. All right. So next question, what do you do to rewrite your narrative in a positive way? This person writes, it's so easy for me to slip back into the too much to do, never good enough feeling, because that's the meta story all around us. She's tried daily checkouts answering, what did you accomplish today, as one of the questions. She knows others do affirmations. She apparently read that Cal Newport kept a note on his desk with how many pages he had written that day. I wonder if you know of any other rituals or routines or habits or things like that.
This is such an interesting question because I never thought of my planner as a narrative writing tool, but I do think that is in part what it serves for me. Like, I set up in the beginning of the day the things I want to do and what the schedule is going to look like. And I enjoy checking them off throughout the day and looking like, look, I did that and I did that. And like, of course, I don't always do all of them, but even if I do some of them, like I can feel good about it. So I do think my planner kind of serves this purpose for me. And I do record gratitude. And I just have to share, like Cameron was like flipping through my planner. And he was like, that's so cool that you do gratitude. And I was like, that's so cool that you think it's cool. Like, I just thought that was so sweet and nice.
Yeah. You know, one thing I do is I sometimes print up nice emails that I've gotten from people, you know, about something I have written or said that was maybe meaningful to them. And if I'm having a rough day, it helps to look back on somebody then saying that whatever else I've done in the past has been helpful to them, right? That's a way to kind of get out of the mindset of not doing enough. And, you know, think back like in your life, like look through your old photos, look at all the cool things you've done at various points in your life. That can kind of get you out of the mindset of, oh, nothing good is happening. It's like, well, except look at all these other things that are good that have happened in my life. I think that can help with rewriting the story. And again, I'm going to put in a plug for time tracking. I know I sound like a broken record with this, but I find that many people who are quite hard on themselves actually have a revelatory experience with tracking their time, that they discover life isn't terrible, right? Like that they are doing things like they may be sleeping about enough amount that they should be sleeping. Like they may be exercising four times a week, like woo, winning. Like you may be working long hours, but you're probably also spending a lot of time with your family. And so a time log helps you see that whatever narrative you are telling yourself, maybe it's true, but maybe it's not, or maybe it's not the whole truth. I mean, you can say like, well, I have no free time whatsoever. And what you really mean is I don't have as much time as I want. Or, you know, you might think like, I never read. Well, you look at your time log and you read like 4 hours this week. Well, maybe you want to read more, but 4 hours is a lot. So this is more the question of like, well, I'm reading 30 minutes a day and I'd like to read an hour. How can I go from 30 minutes to an hour? And it switches from this existential angst to something that is an actual practical matter. So just throwing that out there as an idea, just as a way to rewrite our stories in general.
I like it. All right. The next question's a little challenging. Would you like to read it?
Well, I don't think it's so much challenging. Just, I mean, sometimes I think people pose this to us thinking that it's like a gotcha kind of question or a stumping question. But she says, how do you have the best of both worlds on a low income budget? This person doesn't really have, she says, family close or, you know, her friends are overwhelmed with their own families. And so, you know, what I read into this is someone is just feeling really challenged in life right now, that maybe work is really hard. Maybe the kids are going through some difficult issues. Resources are tight. And obviously, yes, that's going to be a tough time, a tough situation. And so we really sympathize with that and wouldn't be cavalier about it at all. But there probably are still ways to improve life and how you feel about it, no matter where you are starting from. So, Sarah, you had some questions that people could ask themselves in these situations.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, what does best of both worlds mean to you? I mean, we're not suggesting best of both worlds as a certain type of dwelling or car or things like that. Best of both worlds for one person might be different than for another person. So I do think that like reflecting on what you even mean by this question and what you think that concept would mean for you in your circumstances might be useful. I will say connection and family is a big part of what I see making people happy in general, providing support, building community. I mean, I think about people I work with potentially that might have lower incomes, but a lot of times I will say it is like family support that makes them more able to move through life in a like less harried manner because they kind of have backup. And that's really, really hard because you mentioned that you didn't specifically have that. But maybe this is about perhaps like building community with others, even if everybody's overwhelmed. I mean, maybe even if especially if they're overwhelmed, then building that network might be even more important because like you can have each other's backs essentially. I also feel like you mentioned low income. And of course, there may be like factors that I don't know, like an illness or, you know, some specific, you're caring for a child, like there's no way you can do anything else. I don't know your specifics, but sometimes that is a changeable variable. And we don't always like to talk about money, women especially, but Sometimes there are things you can do to change your earning potential. They may take a lot of time. They may take a lot of work. But one of the medical assistants that I work with, who I love, who moved over from another country probably a decade ago, you know, she's been working as a medical assistant, which is not a high-income position. She's been amazing. And over the course of that time, she has a child, by the way, she went to night school and now she got accepted to med school and she's starting. And so she's going to be on a path to not being in the low income category. And I'm not in any way saying like everyone can do that or this is easy, but you know, it doesn't mean that just if you're in one place financially that you're locked into that forever. So if that you feel like is making things tough, and it does make things tough. I mean, we know that like below a certain level of financial security, life is really hard and stressful. But and I'm not saying you wouldn't have thought of this already, but just like think outside the box, maybe a little bit about whether changing paths could be a possible longer term option. It's not something that's going to get fixed overnight, but over the course of a decade, a lot can happen.
I think for many people, building the best of both worlds where they feel like they can do their best job at work and have a happy home life does involve support in some form or another. And the question is how you create that community of support around you. Some people have it by virtue of having a close-knit, helpful, nearby family. That is you. You should celebrate that fact. I know a number of our listeners have actually moved closer to family members if they have the sort of job that can be done in different places or skills that are transferable to different employers. You know, they look for an employer that is near extended family precisely for the reason that maybe they can't afford elaborate aftercare arrangements, but the kids can always go home and go to your sister's house after school, or grandma can pick the kids up from an activity if you are still at work, or various things like that. So that makes it, you know, it's very hard to get that level of support even with a lot of money. You know, I think Sarah and I have talked about this a lot, that creating that level of support is very expensive. Now, obviously, some people do pay for it. So if you don't have lots of family members close by who are able and willing to help out, then yeah, one option is paying to create that support around you, whether through other caregivers, through help with your house, or various other things. And then finally, people can create support through close friend relationships. So I know we've talked to people like who are single parents who band together with another set of two or three single parents who all try to trade off some level of support for each other. So, you know, your friend will take your kids on Saturday so you can do some of the things that you didn't get to during the week. And then you host the playdate on Sunday so they can get to those things during the week. Or maybe your friend works early hours, so her kid comes over to your house in the early mornings and you get them to school, but you work after 5 o'clock. And so the kids go to her house after school. And there's just ways you can create some of that same support with a network of close friends that might be worth looking into. Because if you don't have the family who can do that, the family comes to you sort of more automatically. And if you don't have the income to buy that level of support, then maybe you can create it over time by investing in close community relationships with other people who need support as well. So that's just a way to think about what might be available to you.
Awesome. All right, next question. How do you make decisions about schools, camps, and activities for young kids? What factors play into your decision-making, and how would it be different if you didn't have to think about sibling schedules?
I think the first thing to recognize on things like camps and activities is that this is a pretty low-stakes question. I mean, so you don't necessarily have to have an elaborate rubric of what you are looking for in a three-year-old's activity, right? It could just be, our neighbor is doing this and they like it. Let's try it out, right? Or this other family at preschool is singing the praises of this gymnastics center. So there's a class at a time that works for us. We'll go with it. Or they also liked this camp. Why not try it out for a week or two? Something like that. You know, you can also just observe your kids, like a child who's constantly putting on shows for you just might be interested in theater or singing or dance. Someone who is climbing all over the place might be into ninja classes, gymnastics classes. And then just sort of having a supportive mindset as the kids get older. If they mention something that they would like to try, letting them try it out, whether for a week as a summer camp or maybe as a semester-long activity or just a short stint of something that they might, you know, three Saturdays in a row, you could do X, Y, or Z. But just allowing children to experiment and figure out what they like means that, you know, you'll eventually get to a place where the kids are doing things they more or less enjoy.
Yeah. I feel like I have similar. I just talk to neighbors and friends. If I hear about someone raving about how great some program is, I'm like, give me all the details, because then I can see if one of my kids is interested. Trial and error. Just let them try whatever and see what sticks. I do value logistics a lot. Like, if I can get two kids in a class at the same time, like, I'm here for that. That is so, so, so nice. And I will say, I don't feel like I do, other than what I just said, if it does work out, I don't really limit that much based on sibling schedules because I do have another driver available. Although that can still not be enough drivers sometimes with three kids. But for the most part, I actually don't have to worry too much about that. I do love having everybody on the same school calendar. That's like a big priority to me. So,
yeah, the schooling decision is a little bit bigger. I mean, I guess for us, the default has always been our local public school. But of course, you know, we bought in the district we did because it was known for having good local public schools. And so that might be worth doing a little bit more research into. But even preschool, I mean, we chose our preschool because it was very close to our house and some friends were sending their kids there and were happy with it. And so my husband went and visited and thought it looked fine. And now we've sent five children there because once you find something you like, you may as well stick with it. So shout out for the preschool around the corner that has wound up being a part of our lives for, boy, 12 years plus now. Time really does add up. All right, so this next question, the person writes, you mentioned outsourcing housework and cleaning in favor of paid work. So this person says, I feel like it diminishes the work involved in caring for your home and those who find it fulfilling. So is there at least one task you each continue to do, not because you can't afford to outsource it, but because you find it rewarding? So, Sarah, what was your takeaway from this question?
My first takeaway is really just about who this question is for. And I know our podcast is focused on women who are choosing to work and maybe therefore having less time for this stuff. So we talk about outsourcing. But at the same time, I feel like men have traditionally outsourced this work to their female partners for a long, long time. And they don't get asked about whether it devalues that work, nor there's like a little bit of a shaming that I'm reading into in this question, like, God, like you're not doing this work. And I don't know, like,
yeah, I don't think any law partner would be like, okay, male law partner, you are outsourcing all the cooking and cleaning to your wife. Don't you feel that devalues it by the fact that you're not doing it? Shouldn't you be holding on to some of it as a way to show that it's valuable? I don't know. I guess that's how one might read that question. So there's a little bit of an edge to it, right?
Yes. And then in terms of my actual answer, I mean, many things I do, because you can't and should not outsource everything. I like, in terms of actual tasks I like cooking on Sundays. I like emptying the dishwasher. I like driving my kids around. I just can't drive them in two directions at the same time. So I need to get some help with that. I feel like a lot of times I will outsource on more physical tasks to make time for the human-centered tasks. Again, not because it means the physical tasks are not important, but because I can't do both. And if I have to choose, I'd rather do the ones that directly impact people, whether that's at work or at home. And so I guess I'd say I think it's totally valuable and great to do that stuff. But that has been the default path for women for many years. And we're trying on this podcast to like offer that other option. So I guess that's why we talk about it in this way pretty frequently.
Yeah. I mean, and I would say that there's something kind of missed in the framing of this question, because the nature of having a household of seven people is that there is always work to be done. So even if you are outsourcing a lot, you still wind up doing some of it. You know, and one of the phrases I use sometimes is that when you outsource, you're still a resource. You can often get things down to maybe 5 to 10% of what you would have been doing, but you can't necessarily get rid of it entirely. And so, you know, you're better off making your peace with that situation. And so this framing of, you know, holding on to a task because you enjoy it. Well, you can enjoy it, but still not want to do it all the time, 7 days a week for seven people. So, for instance, I do empty the dishwasher on some days, even though I don't enjoy it because I'm the one who's there to do it. Other days, somebody else does it, but some days I do it because it's getting done seven times a week. I don't do all the laundry, but I wind up doing a load or two a week. So it's not like I'm missing out on the laundry experience. I'm still getting some of it. I'm just not getting all of it. I probably cook at least twice a week. I'm not cooking 7 days a week because somebody else might be on other nights, but I'm doing it some. The cleaners come once a week, but if there's a mess in the kitchen at some other point, you know, I'm not missing out on the experience of cleaning the kitchen just because I've hired someone to clean my kitchen once a week. So I guess the point here being, like, you can find something rewarding, or you can even find it not rewarding, but there's a lot of work to be done. So even if you're outsourcing, you're still doing some of it. It's just that then you're not doing it for seven people 7 days a week. And that can be a real relief if you are trying to do anything else in your life, whether that is paid work or even, you know, spending more time with your kids. Like, there's something to be said for that as well, because often housework and time with kids can be at odds, right? That if you are busy cleaning your kitchen every single day, then maybe that's time that a kid would have wanted to go play in the playroom with you. And if you can not clean the kitchen, that's time that is opened up. So we usually end our episodes with a question, but since this has been an all mailbag episode, we obviously don't need to do a second question segment of our show here. So we'll go straight to the love of the week. And for any new listeners, this is a segment we do every week and we do with our guests as well, where we share something that is positive, that we are enjoying, that we're into right now. So Sarah, what do you have for us this week?
So I got some new wide leg jeans, which I am super excited about. I felt like I needed an update. I've been wearing the Madewell Perfect Vintage jeans for a long time, and they're not skinny jeans, but they're like skinny adjacent. And I just was like interested to experiment with some other silhouettes to kind of get an updated casual look. And so I got these from Ayr, A-Y-R. They're the Secret Sauce jeans. My stylist friend and prior guest on this podcast, Lonnie Inlander, recommended them. So she was right. They're awesome. I feel so cool in them. Welcome 2024. New jeans.
Yay. You know, I never got into skinny jeans. I wore boot cuts in the 90s and then kept wearing them. Even when you couldn't find them in stores, I'd be ordering them somewhere. And then now they're back in, which is awesome because then I can buy them in stores again. So yay for that. But my love of the week is my new Eddie Bauer winter jacket. So I bought one about 6 years ago. That's long, so it's nice and warm, and it was great, but I bought it on clearance. The size they had was extra small, and I'm not necessarily an extra small person, and particularly in winter, if you're wearing like a bulky sweater under your bulky coat, it was just feeling a little tight. So I decided it was time, after about 6 years, after a fifth child, I could get a bigger coat that I could actually button all the way. And so I bought one in a larger size in white, and I really like it. It's also long. It has this nice fake fur hood thing. And so I feel very cozy. And I like that it's a little bit brighter. I mean, maybe I'm going to spill strawberry acai lemonade on it at some point, and then it won't be white anymore, and I will regret my choice. But for now, while it is still gleaming white, I am feeling happy about it.
Love it. It sounds super cute. I can't wait to see it.
It does sound cute. I'm able to send a picture. Or you'll see it next time you come visit me in the winter. Well, this has been Best of Both Worlds. We've been doing an all mailbag episode. Feel free to send us questions. Me, I'm Laura at lauravandercam.com. You can also write sarah.hart.unger@gmail.com. We welcome questions. We do one every week and do mailbag episodes every couple of weeks. We will be back next week with more on making work and life fit together.
Thanks for listening. You can find me, Sarah, at theshoebox.com or at @the_shoebox on Instagram.
And you can find me, Laura, at lauravandercam.com. This has been the Best of Both Worlds podcast. Please join us next time for more on making work and life work together.
It's brand new season 2.
I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.